Hello, friends.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back
to another episode. We're your hosts. I'm Christina.
And I'm Maddie. And this is Murders and Martinis.
Doo doo doo.
How the hell are ya? How you doing?
I am good. The sun is shining today.
Yeah, change of pace. We're filming during the day.
I know. On a whole different day.
Yeah, well, we had a whole last snowstorm on the day that we normally... We did. Record, and we were going to kind of play it by ear, but the minute I got the snow day schedule, or I should say warning from my school, and I looked outside and I went, oh, absolutely not. That's not happening. And you lost internet. Yeah. I lost power for 3 days. So
yeah, you did.
Hey, welcome to buttfuck nowhere. I almost stumbled over that.
I was going to say, welcome to spring in Canada.
Honestly though, but it's funny for those of you who live in Quebec, aka our friends and family,
aka everyone we know,
this snowstorm happened a day before the 1 year anniversary of the huge ice storm we had last year, where I was out of power for 5 days.
I lost power for three.
Yeah, no, it was like brutal.
I was scared that, because I was like, what are the chances it literally happens on the same, I mean, it didn't happen on a weekend, but almost the weekend.
Well, because the last time it happened, it also hit on a Thursday.
I lost power, I think, on Wednesday night.
Oh, no, it was the Wednesday night. It hit, the ice storm hit Wednesday, and then I was out of power until...
like, the Monday.
The Monday, which was Easter. It was Easter that weekend.
Yeah, because I got it back on Friday night. Mm-hmm. And I remember because I went out that night.
Yeah, I didn't. I had to shower at my dad's golf course. Like, that's how long the power was out for us. And also, I was talking about it. It wasn't so bad this time because, yes, we lost power for a while. And there was people in my area who lost power for another, like, day. Like, they only just got it yesterday, which is a comment on our hydro fucking system. You didn't think they'd be, you know, prepared after last night?
Yeah, you would think.
We had service this time. And my generator was plugged in. And we have quite a few plugs. So we plugged in our Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Whereas last time we had no service. Like, you had to drive out of town to even get bars on your phone, which was a huge thing because people had no, like, people's basements were flooding. Like, it was dangerous on the road. So,
yeah.
Anyways, that's a whole comment on why we didn't record on Thursday and why we're recording
on Sunday.
And honestly, it's like a nice change. We used to do this.
Yeah.
In the beginning, we did it at night and then we changed it to weekends. I don't know. It's kind of nice. And it's a beautiful day outside.
It is beautiful.
Going to be gorgeous for the eclipse tomorrow. So. Yeah.
Thank God. Like, yes, we got a fuck ton of snow. Thank God it's already melted.
It's going to be 16 degrees. I mean, we got a snowstorm when it was plus one. Like, how weird is that?
I know.
So it was like wet fucking snow, dude. It sucked.
Yeah, I didn't go outside that day. Because I lost internet, right? So my work was trying to tell me, like, I had to go in office. And I went, do you see what it looks like outside? I'm not moving.
I love when they do that. Like, I love how they're like, I know you don't have internet because of the storm, but drive through the storm.
Yeah, because we have this new policy now where only the first 2 hours we're paid. And then after that, we have to decide if we want to use our vacation hours or just get not paid. Not what? Or just not get paid.
Weird.
For the rest of your shift. And of course, my internet went out at 9:30. I started at 8. So luckily, I think the big boss basically gave us the okay to get paid for that day.
Okay. I guess many people it's out had of your hands, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know quite a few of my like other friends were saying that their bosses like gave them the day, but then there was some who like work in the medical industry that were like, you got to come in. And I'm like, that sucks. But I mean, that's life too, right? Like, that's just like where we live.
That's life.
But yeah. Anyways, so you're good otherwise, though.
So. Oh yeah. I mean, it's been a week, but it's over.
Yeah.
You know, it's the weekend.
New week. Beautiful week coming up.
Yeah.
We booked a fun couple little things that we have planned for the next month.
Yeah.
So
I'm excited.
That was fun. But yeah. Weird week.
Yeah. It felt really long.
I was off until Wednesday for the Easter holiday. Worked Wednesday. Snow day Thursday. Worked Friday. It sucked.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're here.
Yeah, we are.
Doing the damn thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So anyways.
So since it's such a beautiful day outside, I know you made us a beautiful drink. Would you like to tell our friends what the drinks
are? So as you said, It's very, our drink tonight is very summer inspired. Yes, there is a bit of snow on the ground, but it's warm as hell outside. So we are going to be having a peach sangria.
Yes, ma'am.
Two of my favorite fucking things.
I know.
So really basic, I guess, to make. You need some lemons. You need some peaches. You need some white wine. They said peach syrup. I didn't do that. No. It tastes just as nice. You can have a peach liqueur, which we use peach schnapps.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know if that makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Some club soda, and then one of the lemons you can, like, you need to juice it. So you need some lemon juice.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of, honestly, combine all of that together.
Mix it all up.
Mix it all up. I mean, if you've made sangria before, you know it's pretty simple. You mm-hmm. can let it sit for a little bit so it really soaks into the fruits that you put in there. Otherwise, drink it right away. Tastes pretty much the same.
Yeah. Depends. It's good either way.
Yeah. And it's very sweet. Very fresh. I say very sweet. It's sweet.
Yeah.
And it's very fresh, which is lovely.
It is delicious.
Yeah. So, cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
Clink, clink. Okay. So, the sources that I use for this episode are... A Winnipeg Free Press article by Mike McIntyre, the Candace Durkin website, official website, and an incredible book called Journey for Justice, How Project Angel Cracked the Candace Durkin Case, also written by Mike McIntyre. I highly referenced the book. It mm-hmm. gave a lot of insight, whereas the websites kind of were more vague.
Okay.
So a lot of what I got from, like, was from this book. Amazing fucking book, by the way. Like, oh, amazing. Shit. So those are my sources. I'm just gonna say in advance, I'm really sorry for the case that I'm about to tell you tonight. It's very sad.
Great.
And I don't know if you'll love the ending.
It's not solved, is it?
It is.
But you don't think that the person that got caught is actually the person?
I'm not going to tell you.
Well, we're going to have to. We don't have a choice.
Well, like, emotionally.
You guys have a choice. I don't have a choice.
You don't, bitch. It's like me with all your fucking ghost stories, okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
So before we get started, grab a drink.
And take a seat.
And let's get into it. So our story tonight begins on November 30th, 1984, in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Mm. Yeah, that's right. Good old Canada. A little Canadian case for us. A little change of pace. So it was early afternoon on November 30th when Wilma Durkin was running around cleaning her house that had seemingly been rampaged by her three children. So 13-year-old Candace, 9-year-old Odia, I believe it's pronounced, or Audia, and 3-year-old Cyrus. She knew her oldest, Candace, was having a weekend sleepover with a friend at their place, and she wanted to make sure that everything was clean for her friend to come over before the house would ultimately
be destroyed again.
Mm. After a while, though, of cleaning, Wilma realized that it was around 4 p.m., and her daughter would have started walking home by now, or making her way home. And speaking of the devil, while she was thinking of this, Candace had called her while she was still at school.
Mm.
So Candace went to school at Mennonite Brethren Collegiate Institute, or MBCI for short. It was a Catholic middle and high school. The family was pretty religious. Religious, excuse me. There's no T at the end of that mm-hmm. word. And she had just started middle school. So she had changed schools and was now going to a much more religious Catholic middle school. Candace had been hanging out with a boy named David, who was actually 2 years older than her. They definitely had little crushes on each other, okay? Which made her mom, Wilma, a little nervous, just because Candace was only 13.
Yeah.
Boy she liked was 15. And realistically, they actually had 4 grades between the two of them, because David had skipped a grade while Candace had done a grade. Was held back. So just made Wilma a little nervous. She also had never met David before, mm-hmm. but he seemed like a very nice little guy. Mm-hmm. She was just like, I want to know this guy that you keep talking about.
Yeah. Also, I feel like it's always nerve-wracking for parents, like the first crush.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, God, it's beginning.
You're like, it's starting.
Yeah.
So Candace had called her mom Wilma to actually ask for a ride home, but with the younger kids and the house needing to be tidied, having to go pick up her husband at 5 o'clock, it was like a whole situation. They only had one car. Wilma told Candace that she couldn't pick her up that day and would try to reach her dad, Cliff, so that maybe he could kind of not pick her up, but that he could wait longer at work or maybe get picked up early so they could pick up Candace mm-hmm. altogether. David also felt bad, and he told Candace, you know, if I had my license, I would have driven you, and if I didn't have driver's ed today after school, I would have walked you home. And Candace really wasn't that bothered. It was only a 15-minute walk, okay. like 25 at the very, very most. Mm. And it had been pretty nice out throughout the whole day, considering it was the end of November in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But they were getting a storm that evening, so okay. that's why everyone was like, she could walk home.
Yeah.
If it was past 5 o'clock, I'd be worried. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Wilma was still being classic mom and was trying to figure out some sort of solution. So she was going back and forth between disrupting the unusual peace that she had between her two younger children. You know, she would have to put them in snowsuits, get them in the car, get them out of the car, pick up her husband, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
In the end, she called her daughter back and just said, listen, you have money for the bus, yes or no, to either take the bus or walk home. When you get home, we'll pack all three of you in the car, go pick up your dad, and we'll have like McDonald's for dinner. It's like okay. a treat. Candace had already started walking at that point and had told her mom that she did have enough money, and she had stopped at the Ready Mart convenience store to basically answer the phone call from her mom, or like call her mom back,
okay,
and let her know that in the end she was walking, like she had okay. money, but she was just gonna walk because it yeah. wasn't that long.
Plus she had already started. It's like, I'm not gonna might yeah as well just
she
continue.
Was like, I'm just gonna go.
Yeah,
her mom apologized and then promised to take her shopping, just the two of them, later that weekend.
Just the two of us. It can happen if we're the two of us.
So after racing around the house trying to finish all of her tasks, Wilma was suddenly overcome with this like feeling of dread, like mom instincts in a way. She looked at the clock and started to worry, as Candace should have been home by this point.
Mm-mm.
It was like past 4:30. So she packed up the two other children and told them that they were going to go pick up Candace and they were going to go pick up dad. Just to not disturb the peace. Just, yeah. We're going to go get her.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, that snowstorm had hit, and it was starting to seriously snow outside, and we're getting closer to 5 p.m., so the sun was setting, so it's starting to get dark out as well. Wilma kept wondering where Candace was, and Candace knew that they had to go pick up their dad. She wasn't dressed for the weather appropriately, seeming that it had been warmer out the day in the morning when she had left, so definitely not snowstorm
mm-hmm.
material or prep.
Yeah.
After getting the kids in the car, Wilma drove the route that Candace would have taken in hopes of seeing her daughter simply getting distracted, chatting mm-hmm. away with a friend, doing what 13-year-olds do.
Mm-hmm.
But as she neared the end of that route, which had started at her middle school, she began to panic because she didn't see her 13-year-old daughter anywhere. Knowing that something wasn't right, Wilma made the decision to go pick up her husband at work and have him with her so that they could both search for their daughter together. Mm-hmm. Remember, she's got two kids in the back.
Yeah,
she's got a 3-year-old and a 9-year-old.
They already that stressful enough to have two kids looking for your third kid.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can't find that third kid.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of
It's a things. Lot. Yeah. So when they got home, Wilma rushed inside to see if maybe they had missed Candace. She had left the door unlocked, just in case Candace was just late for whatever reason, took a different route. But she wasn't there. Wilma's husband, Cliff, got back in the car and went out looking for her right away, while Wilma called all of Candace's friends to see if maybe she had gone home with them. From what she gathered from her friends, Candace had packed up her gym clothes to bring home to wash, packed her burgundy school bag, had a snowball fight with her crush David outside, called her mother, and began to walk home alone.
Mm-hmm.
After still not hearing from Candace, not knowing where she was, her friends didn't know, Cliff had gone out to look for her twice, didn't see her anywhere, Wilma drove to the school around 7 p.m. after driver's ed had just finished. She wanted to go speak with this David person that she had not met yet.
Mm-hmm.
He too, though, hadn't seen Candace since she started to walk home around 4 p.m. that afternoon.
Suspicious.
Yeah. When it was clear that something wasn't right, Wilma and Cliff called the local Winnipeg Police Department around 7:30 p.m. The female dispatcher asked Cliff and Wilma, quote, "Are you sure she isn't with her friends?" As if these parents hadn't already fucking checked.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Like, you don't think this is my last resort, bitch?
That's it. I don't get it.
We've done all we could.
We're going to have a few moments in this case.
Oh, God. This.
Even after explaining to the dispatcher that they had spoken with all of Candace's friends, followed her last known footsteps, went out and tried to track her route, the dispatcher wasn't convinced, and she asked them, quote, "Well, was she upset? Are you sure she's not with friends? Again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." After explaining once again that they had already gone through all of this, the dispatcher told Cliff and Wilma, quote, "Look, if she isn't home in half an hour, we'll put this out to the Transcona fleet," which is like the rest of the department.
Yeah.
Cliff and Wilma gave the dispatcher Candace's description. She's about 5'1", 105 pounds, blue eyes, light hair. She'd been wearing a black wool jacket with burgundy raglan sleeves, tight blue jeans, a burgundy backpack, and black gloves. After 30 minutes, with no sign of Candace or any updates on her whereabouts, Cliff and Wilma called the dispatcher back, who assured them that a missing persons report would go out to all the officers in the the immediate vicinity.
Okay.
And then she would call back in 2 hours with any updates. But that, too, produced no fucking updates. There were no developments from both police and the school, who at this point, Cliff and Wilma had been calling everybody, like the principal, their boss, friends and family again, etc. Cliff went back out a third time, to retrace Candace's steps, hoping to find anything that would tell him where she might have gone. Mm-hmm. Not like if she's there, but were there any clues that he might not have seen?
Yeah.
2 hours later, we're now hitting 11 p.m. Okay.
Police in the middle of a snowstorm.
In the middle of a snowstorm in Winnipeg.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine.
No. The police finally decided to come by, okay, to get any recent photos of Candace.
It's about time.
That's what I fucking said. To get any recent photos of Candace to send out to all officers in the city, not just the local area. But when they arrived, they didn't just come to get pictures. They came to interrogate the parents. They started to ask Cliff and Wilma all sorts of questions, like, what kind of person was your daughter? Did you fight a lot? Did she not like that you were super religious? Et cetera, et cetera. They told the couple that had been quite a few years since the last child abduction in Winnipeg. That's wrong. Just off the bat, I can tell you right now, that's incorrect.
Yeah.
They were adamant that Candace had to be a runaway. There's no way that she was abducted. She didn't like how strict you guys were, so she just went off for the night.
So fucking dumb.
They didn't seem to care that both Cliff and Wilma were very clear and very adamant that Candace would never do something like that. Like, I know a lot of parents say that, but they were like, I don't think you're understanding that she never has made any mention of it. She's a normal teenager. She was excited for this weekend. Her best friend from out of town was coming in for 3 days. Like, she wouldn't just leave.
Mm-hmm.
One officer had the nerve to turn to Cliff and say, quote, I know what the problem is. You. Okay. You're both religious and Candace is rebelling. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
She's 13 years old. She's 13. In a snowstorm. Like, is it not better to be safe than sorry? Like, just go, even if she is a runaway, who did she run to? Yeah, like, how do you know she's not safe?
Yeah, also, just because even if she was a runaway,
mm-hmm.
doesn't change the fact that she's missing.
That, like, she's not in her home.
She is not where she is supposed to
be. Her parents do not know where she is.
Yeah, and she's also a minor. So normally when they say runaway, whatever, it's usually if you're over the age of 18, they're more like, okay, well, she's an adult. She's allowed to go wherever. She's literally a minor.
Yeah. Like, she's
it doesn't change a anything. Child. Yeah. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Find her.
Like, just try.
Yeah.
Like, they're asking you to just go look. Instead of interrogate them, go fucking look.
At this point, too, it's already been 6 hours. Like, that's a, like, it's not, well, not a long time, but it's a lot.
It's a significant.
When someone's missing?
Yeah.
And it's like, scary. Especially when it's snowing out, like a lot of damage could be done in 6 hours.
Yeah, I feel absolutely.
Like. It's cold.
In a Canadian winter? With no updates still, the police returned the next morning and asked to check Candace's room just for more evidence. Wilma gave the officers some diaries that Candace had been keeping and began to read through them as well to see, like, to help, obviously. But she was stopped by another officer who told her that no mother should look through their daughter's diary.
Relax, sir.
Yeah, Wilma explained that there might be something in there that could help them find her, and the officer just shut her down.
Also, you're not even doing your job, so don't tell me how to parent. And like, do my job.
If my child has now been missing for almost 12 hours, or more than 12 hours, excuse me, I don't give a fuck if I'm reading through their diary. I don't give a shit. I want them back in my home. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they had run away and I had to find their diary and read through it to figure that out. Mm-hmm. I'm reading through anything that I need to and invading their privacy to make sure that they're back.
Yeah, make sure they're safe.
Make sure they're safe. That's it.
Yeah, because you wouldn't do it unless you thought something was really wrong, which obviously she's missing, so...
Yeah, something's wrong. Something's got to be wrong. Mm-hmm. Police still believe that Candace was a runaway, so their priority was clearly not locating her as quickly as they should have. Mm-hmm. And they still didn't believe Wilma or Cliff about anything.
They didn't do anything, right?
No.
Okay.
Later that day, one of the initial investigators called, saying that they were convinced Candace had purposefully run away based on some of the interviews that they conducted with her friends. So... some of her friends basically said that Wilma was, they were strict. Wilma could be a bit overbearing at points. They were a very religious family, et cetera, et cetera. And this officer said, quote, "We are convinced more than ever that she ran away and that you, her parents, are the problem." We'll later find out that this isn't true. Candace was a typical 13-year-old. She had her typical teenage problems, mm-hmm. but she... initially didn't want to go to this Christian school, this Mennonite school, but then within a month, she made a lot of friends and she was really happy that she was there because she was very firm in her belief and her faith. So she too was very religious, not mm-hmm. because her parents were forcing her to.
Yeah.
So their whole argument...
doesn't make sense.
...was shit.
Yeah. Like, it's not a valid argument.
No, not even close. Cliff's boss, Dave Lowen, who ran Camp Aarons, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, excuse me, A-R-N-E-S, Aarons?
A-R-N-E-S,
Aarons?
Aarons? Aarons? Because, wait, if there was an S, it'd be Ernest. E-R-N-A-S.
A-R-N-E-S.
Aarons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Jesus.
I'm like, it's Ernest. Ernest. ESD.
So he was very close with Cliff because Cliff mm-hmm. also helped run a lot of this camp. So Dave Lowen immediately jumped on trying to find Candace. So he organized a civilian search party for her. By the next day, he'd gotten into contact with numerous prominent members within the community, including local businessmen, lawyers, teachers to help search, mm-hmm. got everyone together. And mid-afternoon, so we're almost 24 hours after she's been missing, police have not done shit. Mm-hmm. This man, Dave Lowen, organized around 24 residents in the area to come help search very last minute.
Oh my God, good for him.
So while that doesn't sound like a lot, yeah. that's 24 more people than the police were willing to give.
Yeah.
So... friends of the couple, Wilma and Cliff, were able to get them to speak with a reporter, about Candace very quickly after she disappeared, which got them into the Winnipeg Sun, which is the local newspaper. This coverage led to a number of other calls from reporters with the hope that any publicity would help her case. Hmm. Again, Cliff's boss, Dave, spoke with Crime Stoppers, which is a local mm-hmm. organization. Or not a local, it's a national organization. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to come up with some sort of reward for information. He also organized a civilian search committee, so not just a party, an actual committee, that would continue to look for Candace and organize other resources, search parties, mm-hmm. events, etc., to help look for Candace. A few days after Candace had gone missing, police finally came back to the home with a bit of an odd request. They wanted one of her shoes that would help a search dog. They had conducted an aerial search, you know, like a couple days after she went missing, but it didn't come up with anything unusual. And they were like, they did a few kind of land searches as well, but they weren't able to search on anybody's private property. So it was just public property. So ditches, roadsides, forests, but no one's backyards were checked, etc. Would you do that for a runaway? I don't think so. I guess we've changed our mind there, fucking Winnipeg police. Sorry, this is one case. I don't know if they've changed. I shit on the Quebec police a lot, but
yeah, no.
Just because they've shown more than once that they're not competent. Sometimes. We had a few friends and family tell me to stop being so aggressive.
Yeah.
Hey. Do better, then I will stop being aggressive about it. So, as I had said, police started to change their view on Candace's disappearance, at least in public. Okay. They admitted that their concern was growing each day, but they really did believe that she was just going to show up after the weekend. But I'm like, bitch, we are after the weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. Inspector Bill Heintz, I believe is how you pronounce it, of the juvenile division, told the media that the runaway teen theory was starting to look a little less convincing.
Mm.
He said, quote, statistics show kids who run away usually return within 2 days. While there's no evidence suggesting foul play, we're certainly concerned about the situation.
Mm.
At the time of Candace's disappearance, there were 76 missing youths in Winnipeg, 47 girls and 29 boys. What was that about how there hadn't been a child abduction in a couple of years?
Mm.
Bitch.
Get your fucking facts straight.
Like, 76 is a bit more than zero, okay?
That's a hefty number.
It's a hefty number. In total, police had investigated 4,455 missing children cases in the previous year alone. Inspector Heintz later told a reporter that police were getting calls from many other parents concerned about the volume of publicity in the Candace Dirksen case. He was worried that parents and families from other missing children would want the same media coverage. Okay? Maybe they should be getting the same media coverage. Are you telling me that we shouldn't be telling the public?
Yeah, who chooses who gets how much media coverage?
Who cares if they're getting a lot of media coverage? Their child is missing.
Yeah.
The Civilian Search Committee had started posting bright orange flyers that had "Have you seen Candace?" written in big letters. A number of civilian searches had also taken place. Almost 500 students from MBCI, where Candace went to school, spent their afternoon retracing Candace's route again. They checked rivers, ditches, railways, forests, etc., like I had mentioned before. It was believed to be the biggest civilian search in Winnipeg history.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. The committee also got in touch with a number of missing children organizations like Child Find Organization, the Missing Children Society, and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, all of whom offered any relevant advice and assistance with Candace's case. This encouraged the Civilian Committee to create the Candace Dirksen Search Fund, which would collect donations to help pay for costs with the searches. The police finally agreed at this fucking point to offer a reward for any, or they, excuse me, they allowed the committee to offer a reward for any helpful information regarding Candace's disappearance.
Well, 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 it's about fucking time.
Mm-hmm. However, the family slowly started to lose hope after days turned into weeks, and with that came the possibilities of why someone might have taken Candace. Because before it was like, okay, she got caught in the cold, something happened. And now, with nothing turning up, they were like, oh, okay, something bad has now happened. Mm-hmm. The committee spoke about how someone might have taken her and forced her into sex trafficking, pedophile sex ring, etc., etc.
Mm.
These conversations were had at the committee when both Cliff and Wilma were not present, as to not upset them, obviously. But they did bring their concerns up to the two, as well as the police and other experts, just as theories.
Mm-hmm.
Police at this time had now assigned 4 officers to work the case full time. But as the week started to fly by, the police started to call less and less with updates. Inspector Roman Gierick of the Juvenile Division said how police had already followed up close to 200 calls from the public but had no success. He told the media, quote, "This is very strange that we haven't been able to come up with anything."
Well, I don't know, maybe if you searched right after she went missing.
Yeah, maybe if you did the front when we went to you and asked for help and didn't wait. Ugh.
It was just a few days after New Year's when one of the main investigators called with a request. They were hoping to get a copy of Candace's dental records. They quickly corrected themselves to explain that it wasn't for right now, nothing had been found, but it's always just good to have on file. Which I'm like...
That sounds a bit suspicious to me.
They didn't have anything, it was true, but I think they were all kind of coming to the understanding that Candace at this point probably wasn't going to be found alive.
That's fucking sad.
Yeah. A few weeks into January, remember Candace went missing November 30th, yeah. Now mid-January 1985, Cliff and Wilma had decided to stop by the police station to ask if there had been any updates, because remember, they're not getting as many anymore.
Yeah.
And they also wanted to talk to them about this suspicious young man who Candace wasn't very fond of. So before Candace went missing, they had noticed that there was this older teenager, maybe like young...
Adult.
Young adult, thank you, who had been... outside of, you know, walking past their house more often than not. And when Wilma brought it up to Candace, Candace was like, yeah, that guy's the worst. Like, he's sketchy kind of thing. So she police, knew him. No, she knew of him. Like, it's not a big town that they lived in. You know what I mean? So she wanted to just, like, Wilma wanted to bring it up to police because they never really followed up on if they talked to him. They did. They did talk to this guy. He is sketchy, but, like, not in the ways that we're thinking. He's just a youth. A hooligan.
A youth. Yeah.
However, when they arrived at the police station, they actually shocked the police force that was working that day. Like, everyone was like, oh my God, what are you doing here? Okay. And they were like, we just want to talk to you guys. And they went, actually, can we talk to Cliff privately for a second? Which is the dad.
Yeah.
The couple thought that maybe the investigators were now trying to get Cliff to admit to something because they had been in contact, the family, with another family of a kid who had gone missing a couple years prior, and that family warned them, just be careful. They always try to immediately pin it on the dad. And they got that husband to do a lie detector test, and that's what they thought they were going to have Cliff do when they walked in on this day. But they were very, very wrong. On January 17th, 1985, police had finally located Candace. She had been found dead in a small metal shack only 500 meters from her home. She'd been found under a parka that seemed to have been, like, thrown over her, like a jacket.
Yeah.
Her hands and feet had been bound with twine, rope, and it looked like she may have frozen to death.
Oh, my God.
So police investigated the property where she had been found. It was on a plot of land where a construction company worked out of.
Okay.
The owner of the construction company, Frank Alsip, I believe is how you pronounce it, went through every single detail the day that he found Candace. Everyone was fucking shocked. Like, police had actually searched that property on one of their big searches back in December, like late December. But the shed must have been overlooked. They later tried to kind of excuse it as, you know, it was very, the snow was very bright, so when you opened it to the shack, she was on the ground covered in something, so if a police had opened the door, it made it look very dark inside, they might have not seen her. I'm like, it's a small, you should have gone in.
Yeah,
you know. A few weeks after Candace's body had been discovered, the preliminary autopsy results had come through. Dr. Peter Markestein, the chief examiner for Manitoba, concluded that Candace had died of exposure to the winter elements. He believed that it was a quick death, possibly only a few hours after she had gone missing. So let's just review.
Yeah.
Candace was found with her hands and feet tied. Yeah. So she was taken.
Well, yeah, someone had to do that to her.
But she was not murdered by the hands of someone. That person is responsible for her death, well, 100%.
Yeah.
But, like, they left her in freezing weather with, like, her hands and feet tied, unable to get up and move, so she died of basically hypothermia.
Yeah.
Like exposure.
Yeah.
So if police weren't fucking twiddling their fucking thumbs, I think they would have been able to find her. Because well, she died hours after.
500 meters. That's not very far.
That's half a kilometer.
That's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Could she not have screamed? Did she have something on her mouth?
Yeah, so I'll get into that.
Because, like, could she not have helped? Like,
we're trying to figure it out. So, there were no visible signs of abuse aside from the restraint, found on her wrists and ankles. These would have made it very difficult for her to escape, as I had mentioned. And she hadn't been drugged or poisoned. There was nothing in her system. She had also not been sexually assaulted.
Oh, well,
so
that's good.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
Her vocal cords weren't swollen, which indicated that she hadn't tried to scream.
Okay.
Granted, she was found almost 2 months after she went missing, so this is what they were trying to go off of. But this made investigators think that it didn't look like Candace had struggled very much.
Mm.
And with this evidence, it seemed as though she might have been with someone that she knew or knew of. That was their theory.
I mean, even if someone I know kidnaps me and bounds me in a shed, I would not be like, hey, this is fine.
This is fun for me, you know?
Yeah.
Regardless, this added to a very long list of questions of why someone would do something like this.
It's almost like they took her, bounded, like put her in that shed to be like, oh, I'll come back for you later. And then she just died and we're like, oh, well.
Yeah.
Cool.
Which leads to questions of like, did she see something that she wasn't supposed to? Was that person planning on coming back, but then they got caught, or like something came up with them?
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of different possibilities here.
Oh, God.
With no new leads and no new information, investigators turned their focus towards Cliff.
Of course.
Their theory was that after Wilma had picked him up from work that day to go look for Candace, he went out to look and found her in a compromising position. Again, everything leads back to them being very conservative religious. Yeah. So their theory was that he took her to the shack and left her there as punishment. And then when he went back, she had unfortunately died. Anyways, a few days later, police asked Cliff to come in for a polygraph test. Not only was Candace's father being accused, but also the older boy that she had a mutual crush on, David. Some speculated that a prank might have gone wrong with him and he accidentally, like, because, like, the snowball fight, the whole thing was that he had thrown snow in her face and it was called a face wash. So, because of the playful kind of nature and the crush that they had on each other, they think he might have... It was a prank that basically went too far.
So, just clarify, because this could be off the pot. A face wash when you hit someone in the face with the snowball.
Like, he basically took snow while she was bent down and, like, shoved it in her face.
That's
kind
of
thing. Yeah.
Okay. I thought it had to be like something like, because sometimes like people can get knocked out with snowballs because there's like ice in it and you throw it and then you're like, fuck, you know, maybe thought that's what you were going.
No, it was like in her face.
Okay.
So they're just really grasping at straws, the police at this point. Well, yeah. It's her father, the crush.
It's giving blah, very blah, blah, blah. Much like they just want to close the case and move on.
Yeah.
So they're going to just blame it on whoever.
Well, this
easiest.
Got like, this blew up in the media because this like does not happen in Winnipeg.
Mm.
It does.
Yeah, clearly. Clearly. 4,000 fucking cases.
Yeah, but it was big, big news. So police then held a news conference in March to announce their Crime Stoppers campaign to catch the killer. One of the officers explained their theory that the disappearance may have not started out as premeditated murder, but possibly an innocent event. When a reporter asked if it could have been, quote, a childish prank, the officer responded, quote, that's exactly what I'm leading to. I don't think so. You don't tie someone up and leave them in a shed as a childish prank.
Yeah, what kind of fucking prank?
Okay. But when asked more about it, police wouldn't go into any more detail. They told reporters that most of their information would be kept close to the chest as they didn't want to tip off the killer. And the less that was out there would allow them to weed out any false confessions, which I agree with. I think that's always the best case. Only a few months after Candace's body had been found, a 12-year-old girl was found screaming in an empty train car on Gateway Avenue, which was close to where Candace had gone missing. 12-year-old Patricia Wilson was found tied up similarly to how Candace had been tied. A woman who was walking nearby had heard the little girl's screams and immediately went to help. She found the girl sitting in an empty boxcar, and she was in the process of getting the rope loose around her wrists. There was also a plastic bag that was placed loosely around her head. The poor girl was yelling for her mom.
Oh!
Yeah. So she was saved.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Patricia was a student at Valley Gardens Junior High and was living with her parents in East Kildonan, I believe. Again, only a few miles from Candace's home. Patricia had told police that she had been taken earlier that same day while she was walking home from school. All she could tell investigators about her attacker was that he was a man, but she never got a good look at his face. He had taken her to the empty train car, tied her up, then ran off. That was it.
Fuck.
She didn't mention any other type of assault or attack before she had been found. Her abduction happened around 4 p.m. on a Friday afternoon while she was walking home from school, like I said, exactly like Candace.
Well, well, well. Look at that.
Police also found an odd little detail where Patricia had been found. They found a pack of gum. Now, that's nothing crazy. It's just gum, right? You would think. What's odd is that the same type of gum had been found inside the shed where Candace's body had been found. Now, it's a very generic brand of gum. I don't have the name with me, but... And she'd have been tied up in a similar way.
Yeah, it's a little too similar.
Now, police are wondering if they're dealing with the same perpetrator. Is this a new lead, or was it just another random attack? In 2001, the RCMP tested the twine rope that was found tied around Candace's wrists. They had been tested when she was found, obviously, but nothing came up. Decades later, they decided to test it again, but the results were inconclusive.
Okay.
So now we're about 20 years later. 20. 2-0.
Yeah.
2004.
Right. 20.
And there had still been no arrest in Candace's death and abduction. The 20th anniversary of her abduction, meant interviews and press conferences for the rest of the family, as well as police, too. Wilma and Cliff spoke with news outlets about their love for their daughter and how the family had tried to cope over the last two decades, whereas the police dropped a few hints in their interviews, which was odd. They noted that since Candace's abduction, there had been major advances in forensic sciences in the years prior. So remember, she went missing in 1984.
Yeah.
We're now 2004, so but a lot has changed.
A lot of years have gone by in the investigation department. A lot of improvements have been made, I should have said. I don't even know what I said.
I don't remember.
A lot of time has passed. You can just leave it at that.
Okay. This gave both the family and the public hope that this could mean one day Candace's killer would eventually be caught. In their press conference, police reminded everyone that they still had a few strands of hair that had been found in the shed where Candace's body had been found. With the advances in DNA, investigators hoped these strands of hair would finally be matched to the killer. So DNA taken from convicted offenders are sent now, today, to the National DNA Data Bank in Ottawa, which is run by the RCMP, which I didn't know.
To Metropolis.
Incorrect.
That is incorrect.
DNA profiles taken from crime scenes and cases in which there have been no arrests are also submitted in the hope that a match will be made. So you've got criminal, like convicted offenders, their DNA is being sent to this database, as well as DNA taken from crime scenes that are unsolved.
Yes.
Sergeant Al Bradbury and Detective Scott Halley of the Winnipeg's Police Service had just been assigned to the Cold Case Homicide Unit as lead investigators on Candace's case. Because again, it's 20 years, it's a cold case.
Yeah.
They were a set of fresh eyes on Candace's case.
How many years go by until it's a cold case?
I don't know. That's a good question. Let's Google it. Oh, more than a year.
Anything more than a year?
Yeah, if there's like no leads at all and it's over a year and there's still no leads, then yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So about a year with no leads. So they were a set of fresh eyes on Candace's case. And 3 years later, they would start to make some significant progress.
Oh, shit.
On May 16th, 2007, almost 23 years after 13-year-old Candace was abducted and murdered, her parents, Wilma and Cliff, received another phone call that would change their lives. An arrest had been made, and his name was Mark Edward Grant. According to the National Parole Board about Mark Grant, documents revealed that, quote, Mark Grant is a schizophrenic whose mind is filled with disturbing rape fantasies, lust for vulnerable teens, a hatred of women, and an unwillingness to take any treatment for his perversions.
Oh,
that's an official document, by the way.
Dang, this guy needs help.
So let's talk about who Mark Grant was, yeah, as much as I fucking don't want to. Mark Grant had spent 13 years in prison from 1991 to 2004. So this is after Candace had been, went missing and was found.
Yeah.
Except during this time for a short 9-day period when he was out on parole. 9 days.
Yeah.
Okay. Where he raped another young woman. Okay. Piece of shit.
Yeah. That's what they said. They will do it again.
Mm-hmm.
If you let them out.
In prison, Mark implied that he may have committed other sex crimes going back to the 70s, none of which he was ever charged with.
Oh, fucking guy.
In 1984, when Candace had been abducted, Mark had escaped from jail and was wanted across Canada. So he was out when she went missing. He had a criminal record that included an assault conviction against an underage sex worker. Other offenses included forgery, fraud, breaking and entering, and failing to comply with court orders. He had been in custody, police custody, I should say, in 1984 since May, after being arrested for breaking and entering. He escaped from the facility where he was being held on November 7th, 1984. So
like 2 weeks before.
He was 21 years old at the time.
Oh my God. Where did he escape from?
It was like a police facility. Like
where she lived? Or like
In Winnipeg, yeah.
Okay. Well, Winnipeg is huge.
Well, you're thinking of Manitoba. Winnipeg is a city.
You're so right. Still. No, well, but no, the city's pretty big.
Winnipeg is big. It's like Montreal, but it was near the suburb where
she lived.
She lived in Winnipeg.
That was my question.
Yeah.
And you're thinking of Manitoba, which I was.
Yeah, I know. I did it too. I was like, why are we being so vague? Yeah. I was like, Manitoba's the province.
I'm not very smart when it comes to geography.
Mark was arrested almost a month later on December 10th, then questioned by police about Candace's disappearance. So he was arrested simply for out of the facility that he was being held in. And then while he was being arrested, they were like, hey, Candace hadn't been found at this point. She had just been missing. So they did question him about her disappearance. And they were particularly interested in him, at the time after another teenager who was claiming to be Mark's girlfriend was 15-year-old Aubrey. He was 21.
I was going to say, a 21 dating a teenager? It's a bit weird.
She told them that Candace had been, quote, hanging around with them for the past few weeks before going missing. However, Aubrey wasn't the most reliable witness.
I was going to say, it sounds like take that with a grain of salt
kind of thing. Investigators did say that she was, quote, found to be untruthful in a number of matters regarding the missing person investigation, and most of what she related to them could not be relied on.
Yeah, because I also feel like, are you just, like, sticking up for him? Was she still with him at this point?
I mean, I don't know. Because he was like, let's remember, he was assaulting people.
He was also a piece of shit.
Big piece of shit. Mark told investigators that he didn't know anything about Candace other than what he had seen on the news in the past couple weeks.
Yeah.
He also admitted to police that after escaping jail, this is important, he had dyed his hair red. But police found an empty box of light blonde hair dye in his home. So he said he dyed his hair red, but there was a box of light blonde hair dye.
Mm-hmm.
Empty.
Yeah.
To Winnipeg police, the hair dye was a huge red flag and had them keep their eye on Mark Grant because the hair found at the Candace Dirksen crime scene was blonde.
Mm.
Recently bleached blonde hair strands.
Look at that.
But even though he was a person of interest, they didn't have anything on him at the time. Because remember, 1984, different.
Mm-hmm.
So the case went cold.
What did I say? Forensic. What did I say?
You said
evidence.
I don't know what you said, to be honest.
Investigation thing.
That stuff.
Mm.
During that time, you know, while the case went cold, Mark was convicted on 3 sexual assaults between 1989 and 1994, where he was sent to prison, like I said, for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
In November of 1991, he was convicted of raping a woman and was sent to prison for another 4 years. In 1994, July 94, actually. He was released early on parole, then immediately raped a 22-year-old sex worker 9 days after being released.
Why are we still letting him out? Mm-hmm. Have we not learned our lesson?
She told investigators that Mark had approached her and invited her for a beer at his apartment nearby. She went with him, and after entering his apartment, he immediately locked the door and grabbed her by the throat, threw her to the couch, and ordered her to stick her tongue out where he tried to bite it off before assaulting her.
Hey, what the fuck?
He then threatened to kill her if she told anyone or went to the police. She obviously went to the police and picked him out of a lineup, and his parole was revoked, and he was sentenced to 9 years in prison.
Good. Fuck you. Don't bite my tongue off.
Bit like, fuck get you, dude. Get away from me.
You get out of here.
Officials had some serious concerns for the safety of young women during this time who had known Mark. Because he clearly was fucking garbage.
I was going to say, he wasn't a good dude.
No. The parole board wrote in 1995, quote, "Your sexual / assaultive behavior has resulted in serious harm to the victims. You have been predatory in your choice of victims, often looking for unsophisticated and vulnerable post-pubescent female children."
Yeah.
The board is satisfied that, if released, you are likely to commit an offense causing the death of or serious harm to another person before the expiration of your sentence.
Well,
look
at that.
Interesting. In the report, it revealed that Mark linked his, quote, hatred of women to the behavior of his mother and sister and being, quote, victimized as a child, but didn't go into any further details. So I don't know how to elaborate on that.
Yeah.
He also refused any type of treatment, such as chemical castration, that would have gotten rid of his, quote, sexual urges. Because he was constantly assaulting children and women. And when given him the opportunity to go to treatment, any type of treatment, he was like, no.
Like, he doesn't want to be fixed. He doesn't want to be fixed.
Nope.
Doesn't, what? Doesn't want help?
Doesn't want help. Doesn't want to be fixed. Nothing.
Yeah.
In 2004, the parole board came back and said, quote, "You are considered to be more concerned about your own sexual gratification than you are about the consequences of your offending causes to others. You admit your sexual gratification comes from the vulnerability of young women and children as they are, quote, so trusting."
Mm.
So let's dig into that a little bit. He made it clear, like admitted, that he did not want to get help. Because that means he would not be able to, quote, get off. And that he got off on young women and young girls when they got scared because they're so trusting.
That's all... kind of makes me sick.
Another report revealed that a test done on Mark showed an elevated level of arousal to rape stimuli. With the highest peaks occurring with the material depicting inappropriate sexual contacts with children... predominantly female. So he's a pedophile.
Well.
Now, I just want to go into a little bit more of the evidence that had been found, just because I want to show different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So the hairs that I had talked about that were found near Candace's body, there were 7. 3 were pubic hairs, and 3 were lightly bleached scalp hairs that I talked about before. Police weren't able to test the hairs for DNA at the time, but in July of 1993, as we know, DNA testing had greatly improved. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at the time of 93. We've gone back in time a little bit. Candace's case had already gone cold, and investigators were really only looking at dangerous sex offenders as potential subjects anymore. Because they were like, we've gone through over the last decade of if it was anybody that she might have known. Now, one sex offender, in particular that they were looking at was a man named Stanley Pomfret.
Okay.
Sorry. In 93, he had just been arrested and charged for murdering a Winnipeg teenager and raping and torturing 2 others. So, a monster.
So many things about rape in this fucking story.
Police had sent the hairs from Candace's crime scene to the RCMP forensic lab for comparison to Stanley's hair in particular. Mm-hmm. The results showed that while they had significant similarities, there wasn't enough hair to, like, properly produce a usable DNA profile.
Okay.
The hairs were never used to compare to other suspects, including Mark Grant. Why? No fucking idea.
Well, yeah.
You think they would have.
And they had like tunnel vision, right? So, I mean, not surprising.
Exactly. Police tracked down Mark again in December of 2006. Okay. Oh. To interview him a second time about Candace's case because his name kept popping up. Mm-hmm. He again told police that he never knew Candace. And he was asked to provide a voluntary DNA sample, to which he refused. They put him under surveillance to obtain his DNA to compare what to the, like what they found at the scene, basically. Mm-hmm. Earlier that year, though, so this is December 2006, earlier that year, they were actually able to get some fresh samples of DNA without his knowledge.
Okay.
They had found some of his head and pubic hair in an evidence locker from his first sexual assault arrest in 1989. They got lucky with a blood sample when Mark was actually shot after roaming around someone's home in March 2007.
Oh, shit.
So there's, like, evidence. They're able to get different DNA profiles, but they really wanted to get, like, hair profiles to be able to match concurrently. Not concurrently, excuse me, conclusively. Mm-hmm. They immediately sent all the swabs that they eventually got to the Ontario lab to be tested. Mm-hmm. In April, they got their results. Okay, this is April 2008 now, I believe. The hair samples were a match to Mark Grant's DNA. Being that Candace's case was one of the most talked about cases in Winnipeg's history, finding a jury of 12 unbiased individuals was not going to be easy for both prosecution or the Crown, right?
Yeah.
Or the defense.
Shit.
But ultimately, obviously, a jury was created and the trial officially began on January 20th, 2011.
So many years later.
Yeah.
But you know what? Better late than ever.
Yeah, that's what I say. Mark Grant's defense wanted to bring back in the young girl who had also been abducted the same year as Candace, Patricia Wilson, to prove that it must have been another man that abducted. Because in police's mind, Patricia and Candace were abducted by the same man.
Yeah.
Because it was too similar. Mm-hmm. But Mark was in jail and had been rearrested
at the time of the
second abduction. However, when she went on the stand to testify, she immediately broke out in tears. She's now like an older woman. This is now 20-something years later. And told the court that she doesn't remember anything. And she thinks she might have confused her nightmares with reality. So this is where I struggle a little bit with this part of the case. Because she did go into detail in the book about how she came from a very troubled household and had a lot of nightmares as a kid.
Yeah.
And might have come up with a story. But she was found by someone.
Yeah. So it happened. Is that person also not real?
No. So it's, I don't know. This is where it gets confusing because even police were like reports from back then, the woman that had found her had since passed away. They were able to talk to her again. Police officers who worked that case couldn't remember because it had been almost 30 years. Like it was just unfortunate because no one really knew what the truth was here.
Because she was testifying for the prosecution, correct?
No, she was testifying for the defense to say, like, yes, this happened.
Know. Okay.
The defense wanted her to basically say, like, yeah, that happened. Mm-hmm. So that's
a huge
defense
piece of evidence against the Mark guy, right? Because it was too similar. So they were pinning it on him.
And this would have said, like, it couldn't have been him because he was in jail when Patricia went missing.
Okay. Makes sense.
So jurors were told that 13-year-old Candace had succumbed to exposure to the elements and were then shown several graphic photos of her body when it had been found. Mm. From the photos, jurors could see that Candace wore a blue winter coat, a hoodie, a blouse, and jeans. She was missing her right running shoe, though, and her sock appeared to have been torn. A small bag of makeup, a clarinet, and some school textbooks were also found thrown in the shed, like thrown around. Now, the Crown had planned to call on more than 30 witnesses during the trial, and retired Winnipeg police officer Ronald Allen was the first. He told the jurors how investigators had recreated Candace's death by tying up an officer in a similar way and seeing if he could kind of get out of his bonds, I guess. And he said, quote, he could roll around on his back, front, and side, but was unable to stand up. So when I say tied, in the book, they go into more further detail later on about how she was tied. She was hogtied.
So that's when, like, your arms are, like, attached
to your feet behind
you. Yeah, okay.
So she could roll around, but she could not get out of her position.
They're not separated.
No.
Yeah.
and she would not have been able to escape the shed on her own. Mm. Like, she was stuck in there.
Yeah.
Mark's defense team immediately began contradicting the Crown's witnesses. His lawyer, Saul Simmons, was quick to pounce on Ronald Allen first. He asked Ronald Allen, quote, "You weren't in a good position at that stage that the preservation of DNA was even a consideration, were you?" Ronald admitted that the crime scene could have been contaminated after police found her body. He also said investigators would have had no way of knowing that there would be such significant scientific advances in the field of DNA and forensics. So being conscious of what they were bringing into the crime scene wasn't a concern.
Mm. Wait, she died of hypothermia, right?
She died of exposure, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
Did she not? Was she still wearing her jacket and everything?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was like minus 14.
Okay.
Multiple officers had walked through the shed and the area around it and hadn't worn any type of protective clothing when they collected evidence and samples. So the defense attorney, Simmons, asked again, quote, "While you realize today you may have been contaminating things, you wouldn't have realized that back in 1985. Ronald said, no, he really didn't. I mean, who fucking would have in 1985? Yeah. I mean, it's not the 40s. Like, you know, yeah, that they now had the ability to collect evidence and like hair samples and fingerprints. So yes, they should have been wearing some protective gear. But you didn't know that we would have the equipment that we have now.
That's true.
Saul Simmons suggested that we'll never really know who the different officers who worked the scene had come into contact with. And he implied that it was possible different material could have been brought to the scene.
Mm.
Which I'm like, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
Former chief medical examiner Dr. Peter Markenstein also took the stand. He said Candace had been hogtied and could have been alive for up to 24 hours after being left in, negative 25 degree weather.
Oh,
my. I was mistaken. Negative 25 degrees,
that's
dude.
That's so cold. Oh.
Like, we had negative 26 last February, remember?
Oh, God. I know it gets fucking cold here, so I'm not surprised.
Like, that was brutal. He told jurors that Candace probably didn't suffer any pain because she would have quickly been unconscious.
Yeah.
Her cause of death was ultimately exposure to the winter elements or hypothermia. There were no signs of sexual assault.
Which is bizarre if it was that Mark guy, because he was so,
because he was like a rapist.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if something happened and he got spooked.
Yeah.
Like he left her there. Was gonna come back, but then got spooked.
But also, they found pubic hair, right? So I wonder if he was, like...
But they didn't, yeah.
Wanking it off.
But then they didn't find any, like, semen or anything like that, though.
He could have used something else. He could have came in his boxers.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that, man. He's disgusting.
It's just weird to find pubic hair on, like, if it wasn't out in a boot.
That's
a boot.
What I mean, like, scalp hair, sure.
Yeah.
Pubic hair? In negative 25 degree weather? Sir.
Why was your pubic hair out?
Yeah. Put your dick away.
Yeah.
Dr. Markenstein also said, quote, "The brain and organs can't function at such a low temperature, and the brain doesn't send any messages to the heart, so the heart stops."
Mm.
She lost consciousness pretty fast, but it may have been hours before she actually died.
Yeah.
There's no pain because the pain receptors no longer function when you're that cold. That is a sign that things are getting much worse and not better. So if that's any comfort, you know. While Mark's DNA was linked to the crime scene with the sloppy police work and contaminated crime scene and over two decades that were affecting memories, it was going to be it was going to be pretty difficult to win the case.
Yeah.
Right. All the defense had to do was raise a reasonable doubt. Yeah. That's what I always forget, is that the defense doesn't need to prove it was someone else. They need to simply make the jury think that it could be someone else.
Yeah.
You know? The trial ended on February 15th, 2011, and the jury deliberated for 3 days. It was just past 9 p.m. when everyone was invited back into the courtroom, and Justice Glenn Joyle, which was the judge, began proceedings. The jury proceeded to give their verdict. They found Mark Grant not guilty of first-degree murder, but guilty of second-degree murder.
Okay.
So remember, first-degree means it was premeditated. second degree. I would have to agree, though. Like,
yeah, he probably just died of
the elements, right? So, however, you could still argue that he might have been planning to kill her the whole time. He just didn't have the chance to because the elements got to her first.
Yeah.
So this verdict came with a mandatory life sentence with no chance of parole for at least 10 years. But the judge had the ability to raise the eligibility of parole up to 25 if he felt it was warranted, which he did.
Good.
He said, quote, "This was a senseless and unspeakably cruel act. Uncertainty and dread eventually gave way to horror."
Mm.
Justice Joyle said jurors found Mark Grant had the state of mind required for murder when he left Candace tied up in freezing temperatures, which led to her death. So he was not like, he was in his right mind when he did that. He made the active choice. Mark had no reaction when the verdict was read. He wasn't sad. He wasn't upset. He wasn't happy. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Candace's parents later told the media that they took no joy in what happened during the sentence. They just, all they could do now was grieve.
Well, yeah.
Mark Grant wasted no time in trying to appeal his conviction. He filed documents in June, which was only months after he received his verdict. He asked the Manitoba Court of Appeal for a retrial, and his defense attorney, Saul Simmons, cited 18 alleged errors made by the judge during the trial. On October 30th, 2013, the Manitoba Court of Appeal overturned Mark Grant's conviction.
Overturned? Sorry, I'm looking at what she looked like and what he looked like. I'm very visual. I didn't want to ruin it for myself. That's him, right?
Yeah. Well, that's him now.
Well, yeah.
So don't read anymore. Don't
look at anything. No, I'm looking at photos. I'm not reading.
The Manitoba Court of Appeal overturned Mark Grant's conviction, stating that the trial judge had made an error in not allowing the defense to present evidence that pointed to another possible killer, which was the unidentified man who tied up the second girl in 1985.
Okay.
In March 2015, the Supreme Court of Canada upheld the appeal court ruling and announced that later that year a new trial will begin.
So he got his poor retrial. Family.
I know. 2015, and she went missing in 1984.
Yeah, 30 fucking 1 years later. Yeah, because I was going to say, actually, I want to ask, I don't know if you saw this when you read the book or if you know, but because obviously the mom saw the man walking outside of their house.
That was just a hooligan, like that was never someone. No, he was cleared, like he had an alibi and everything. Okay. Yeah. He was like a weird 18-year-old. Okay. Yeah. On January 16th, 2017, only one day away from the 32nd anniversary of Candace's body being found, a second trial before only a judge, so no jury, began. Only on the second-degree murder charge, right? Yeah. So they retried him simply for the verdict that he got, not on the first-degree murder charge.
Yeah. For basically the time in prison.
Mm-hmm. On October 18th, 2017... Manitoba Court of Queen's Bench Justice, so the judge, Karen Simonson, found Mark Grant not guilty, stating that she accepted the defense's argument that the DNA evidence from the case against Mark was, quote, fundamentally flawed, and Mark Grant was released later that same day.
Oh my God. But how is it, if it matched his the hair, what?
They're basically saying that due to the evidence potentially being contaminated and the fact that the defense team could not present any other evidence leading or indicating that another man may have been involved, that a retrial was given. And this judge stated that she thought the evidence, the DNA evidence found against him was flawed, like it was contaminated.
Okay.
And once again, Candace Dirksen's case went unsolved.
Oh,
now, I'd like to end this on a bit of a lighter note, because that is where the story ends. That is where we're at in 2024. Yeah, he's out. He's living his life. And her case has now been labeled unsolved. So I want to state that letting that man go, I firmly believe that he fucking did it.
Yeah.
But I want to talk a little bit about who Candace was as a person. So the book I used for research, as I mentioned before, it uses a lot of testimony from her friends and family, and they speak so highly of her, so I highly recommend that you take a read, or take a look, excuse me.
Yeah.
Her parents described her as a typical teenager. She loved her friends. She loved sports. She wasn't super keen about school, but she was devoted to her family and faith. As I mentioned, they were a fairly religious Mennonite family, and their faith, brought them a lot of peace in their time of need. Her friends described her as bubbly, friends with anyone and everyone, and someone who would have changed lives if given the chance. Not long after Candace's body had been found, the civilian search committee had come together with Candace's friends and family and decided to use the money that had been donated for the search for her and the case for her. They were going to give it to the gentleman that found her, like the employee on the construction site, but he didn't want it because he felt like he felt guilt, really, about finding a 13-year-old's body. And so they came together and decided to make a memorial swimming pool at Camp Aarons, where her father worked, and where she was also a camper as well, like an active member there. She loved to swim, and it was mentioned multiple times in the book that she was a huge swimmer, and it was actually like a beloved family tradition.
Oh.
Everyone agreed that giving her, or kind of naming a memorial pool after her, would be the perfect thing. And that is the devastating case of 13-year-old Candace Dirksons, who was abducted and left to die in November of 1984.
Well, fuck.
Yeah, I told you you wouldn't like it.
But I did never... like it, and I didn't.
Yeah. I'd never heard of this story before.
Neither have I. Considering it was in Canada, I'm kind of surprised.
I feel like we don't hear a lot, though. In Canada.
No.
There's like very few. No, but it's like very few that we are told about, right? Like it was, what's his face from Montreal? The one who murdered the guy on the Dicarry. Luca Magnotta. And then Paul Bernardo.
And, oh, yeah.
Carla, what's her face? Who lives in fucking Valleyfield. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, she lived in Vaudreuil for the longest time. What? She was allowed to work in a school. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
She was an aide in a school after she gave her, teenage sister to her boyfriend as a gift to murder.
Wow.
But yeah, so other than those two, I've done a few Canadian cases now that I have not ever heard of. And it's wild to me that we don't hear about these things because I think it's so important. And, I mean, like a 13-year-old girl was abducted and essentially murdered, and her killer was never found, and we have never heard of this case.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
Poor family.
Yeah, I know. And they're such a lovely family. Like, when you read about them, they just went through, like, the most tragic thing you could ever possibly think of, and they don't wish... Like, they firmly believe that Mark Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, abducted their child and was the cause of her death, but they don't wish him, like, harm. They just want him to, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, they want justice for her, right? But they don't want him to, like, rot in prison. Like, they want him to face what he's done, essentially. And I mean, like, they're better people than me, because...
Oh, I know.
I mean, they're just so amazing.
Oh, well, I'd say thank you. But I'm upset.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But I'm happy I know about the case now, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
Well done, as usual.
Thank you.
Hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah, if you guys did, in a way, subscribe.
I hate saying that. It's so weird.
I know. It's not a great thing, but if you want to hear more cases like this, like, subscribe wherever you're listening.
Give us 5 stars.
Yeah, leave a review if you can.
Yeah, tell your friends.
Tell your family.
Tell your neighbors.
Tell your coworkers.
Tell the person on the street.
Yeah, from the rooftops.
All the things.
Everything. You can follow us on Instagram at Murders and Martinis Podcast or on Facebook at M&M True Crime Podcast. So with that, stay safe.
And stay spooky.
Doo-doo-doo-doo.